Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the OT Schoolhouse Podcast. As you may have heard me talk about on the podcast before, one of my favorite people to work with on an IEP team are the adapted physical education teachers. They just seem to understand occupational therapy, and they are always up for collaborating. Shout out to Joanne, who listens to every episode of the OT Schoolhouse Podcast, even though she's now retired. It was fantastic working with you. Thank you for your support, and I hope you're enjoying your walk this morning. But I also recognize that many OT practitioners, maybe like yourself, don't have an APE counterpart to rely on when it comes to supporting students during physical education. That's why today we are joined by Faith Newton, an OT based in England, to discuss inclusive physical education for students with special education needs and disabilities, aka SEND students. That was a new one for me. Faith is passionate about supporting students to fully participate in PE and even wrote a book on the topic. We'll be sure to link to that in the show notes in case you're interested. My discussion today with Faith focused on two different areas. First, we're going to dive into occupational therapy in the schools and what that looks like in the UK as compared to models in the United States. Faith provides insight into how OT services are structured and delivered across different contexts. And I will warn you, it is very different from what we have over here in the States. Second, we're going to dive into strategies for making PE more inclusive and accessible for all students. Faith is going to share universal design principles that can benefit all learners. And together, we are going to explore targeted and individualized supports for how OTs can support and collaborate with PE teachers to support, again, all students to fully engage in physical education. I'm excited to share with you Faith's expertise in this area today. Thank you so much for joining and stay tuned. We'll be right back with Faith Newton.
Hello and welcome to the OT Schoolhouse Podcast, your source for school-based occupational therapy tips, interviews, and professional development. Now, to get the conversation started, here is your host, Jason Davies. Class is officially in session.
Welcome to the OT Schoolhouse Podcast, Faith. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us. This is definitely a topic that I've always been interested in. Like, you know, I'm a very much, especially growing up, very much into sports. And in California, we actually have, related service providers that work in the schools called adaptive physical education teachers. But I know that isn't necessarily common. And so I'm excited to talk to you today about occupational therapy in the world of physical education. And that is just something that you're so passionate about. And can't wait for you to share. This is going to be a fun one. So I hope you're excited.
I am. It's quite funny because I was not sporty at all. We come from the opposite sides with experience.
It's funny how that works. But I mean, at the end of the day, you know, now we're older, we're occupational therapy practitioners. It's all about supporting the students and supporting them in what they enjoy. And many, many students love PE, even if it's not necessarily always the sports side of PE. There's other aspects to PE, and we'll talk about that. But yeah, let's dive into it. And the first thing that people listening might have noticed is your accent. We usually have US-based therapists on here. So let's start with there. Where are you joining us from today?
Sure. I'm in Gloucester in England. So it's about 40 miles south of Birmingham.
All right. Birmingham. I know that name. I have no idea where it is. I could not find it on a map, but I hear of it, you know, some Bridgerton language in there and all that fun stuff. So, yeah. So you're in the UK, and you know what? I don't want to get into the school-based OT side first. I definitely want to ask you how it's different there versus in the States. But before I do that, how did you get into the world of occupational therapy and where are you currently practicing in the world of OT?
Sure. So I got into it. My mum has cerebral palsy. So I was kind of aware of OTs and I guess just disability really growing up. It's just kind of part of my life. And then somehow, yeah, I think I was about 16 and we have like a week's work experience in the UK when you're 16. And so I asked a local hospital if I could go and do work experience, and it was awful. It was like literally just giving out commodes, or do you know what a commode? Yeah, yes. Do you know what commode is? Yeah, commodes, yep. And like getting people on and in and out of the bath, but like really fast. You didn't get to know anybody. And a 16-year-old, I was just like, I'm not doing this with my life. There's no way. But I knew there was more to it. And I thought, okay, I'll come back later because I'd done some reading and I knew it was good. it just like was feeling not quite right then. So I did an English Lit degree and then worked in Afghanistan for a few years for an NGO. And while I was there, I went to a clinic with kids with CP, cerebral palsy, like my mum, and they didn't really have anything. And I was just like, I really want to help and be able to make a difference to kids, disabled kids. So then I kind of looked up training and went to back to university. So that's kind of how I got into it. And now I'm kind of at a crossroads, actually. I'm doing some school-based OT work privately, and I'm about to pivot my business slightly to doing like online kind of telehealth with parents, neurodivergent children, and PDA kids, so pathological demand avoidance.
Okay. Yeah, that's a very hot topic, or that acronym. I've been hearing that more and more and more lately, PDA. And, you know, the first time I heard of it, PDA is not what I thought of as pathological demand avoidance. But yes, definitely a growing area of need to support parents and everyone in that realm. So, yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. And my son has PDA, so it's kind of very close to my heart.
Yeah.
And the reason for pivoting is really he's not at school at the moment, so I kind of need to be based more from home. So I'm kind of adapting it and realizing that hopefully I can be a big blessing to a lot of families who are just kind of stuck. And I've lived it. So I've got the personal and professional experience.
Fantastic. Yeah, I think you'll be able to. I mean, like you said, you've lived it a little bit. Plus, you have the occupational therapy side. So you'll really be able to support a lot of parents and maybe even some teachers and other families that are supporting students with PDA. So awesome. You mentioned when you're kind of talking about what you've done as an OT, school-based OT, but you also kind of said it as a private practice, which is interesting because in the States, we often think of school-based OT as one thing and private practice as more the clinical side of things.
Okay. So, it's the opposite here.
Oh, really? So, yeah, I would love for you to share with us just what school-based occupational therapy looks like in the UK, because we have primarily a listenership of US-based, although we do actually have a fair amount of listeners in Australia and in the UK. So I would love to learn more about what it looks like in your neck of the woods.
Sure. So a lot of OT with children is with the NHS, so it's free.
The NHS being the National
Health Service, yeah.
Okay.
So we fund it through our taxes, but it's free at point of delivery. Mm-hmm. There's also very long waiting lists. That's kind of downside. So I worked for an NHS clinic, I guess you'd call it, for 4 years. And so the doctor or the school would refer to us. We would see the child and parent in the clinic. And then I would also go into school to do some assessments and intervention in the school. But I would go to 25, 30 different schools, kind of rock up for an hour, hi to the teacher, hopefully get 10 seconds to pass over any information, and then be on to the next one. Yeah, you guys are way ahead of us with school-based OT. So basically about 4 or 5 years ago, NHS were like, oh, we should think about school, like school-based OT. And we've got like this tiered model that the Royal College of OTs in the UK are kind of pushing. So you have like the universal provision, which would be a whole school class, targeted and then individual. And they're trying to get people to do more of the universal provision. But that kind of looks like maybe one training a term for a school or maybe being in a school a bit more, but there's not a lot of it. So, yeah, there's not many people kind of doing private school-based OT either. So I think I did something. I've not met anyone else who does quite what I do. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, sorry, I think I kind of cut you off a little bit, but the three different tiers in the United States, we call it under RTI or MTSS, and we have tier one, which tends to be universal, tier two, more targeted interventions. And then tier three might be what some consider that special education, others consider it just more targeted, but not yet special education. Is that pretty similar to the model that you would be using?
Kind of. For us, the individual, is that tier one or tier three?
That would be the top, the tier three.
Yeah, the top tier. The top tier is one-on-one. Doesn't matter if it's special education or mainstream. It just means one-on-one as opposed to a group or the class.
That makes it so simple. Like, I love that it's because here in the States, no one can figure out what tier three really is and how it's separate or the same as special education. I wish we could just make it nice and straightforward, right? Tier one, universal, tier two, groups, tier three, individual. Like, boom, that That would be nice and easy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, at least we kind of know what we're working with now here. We both have this tiered intervention type of system, which is great. Before we kind of move on, I do want to ask you, so you said that you worked for a clinic funded by NHS, basically, is way it worked, right?
Yeah, it was an NHS clinic. So,
okay.
I mean, a clinic in that we had a building that kids would come into with a central integration room, but most of my day was spent kind of out of the clinic going into schools and homes.
Okay. So then I do want to ask you, because here in the States, a lot of school-based OT practitioners are employed directly by the school or maybe by a contract agency that's being contracted to work with a specific school, specific district or county. It sounds like this is very separate in the sense that you work at an NHS clinic. How, I guess the question is how does the school and the NHS clinic work together, or do they? Does that make sense?
It depends on the individual therapist. So like my manager was really big on you phone the school, you don't just speak to the receptionist, you ask to speak to the SENCO, who is the Special Education Needs Coordinator, who is like responsible for overseeing all the kids with special needs, to speak with them, kind of explain, you know, the referral, get their perspective and opinion. So that's what I would try and do. In reality, sometimes it was kind of, you rock up at the school and say, oh, yeah, we know you're coming. You go in and you kind of leave again. So,
yeah.
Because you're not paid, you know, they're not paying for you. And I think that, I think that does make a difference, because now when I'm doing independent work, it's because the head teacher wants me, the SENCO wants me. And I'm talking about the whole school priority. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about inspections and their ratings and how are we going to improve everything. Yeah. And it's completely different from kind of the doctor wrote a letter, and so I have to come into the school.
So is that how it typically would work at the NHS clinic? Because a doctor writes a letter saying, hey, this student or this kid needs OT. And then from there, you decide whether or not you're going to see the student in the clinic or if you're going to try and go into the school?
It can be the GP. It can be another health professional. And depending on the trust, it can be a SENCO as well. So sometimes the schools refer that individual pupil.
Okay.
But then they may have to wait 6 months, 1 year, 2 years to be seen.
Wow.
And my NHS organisation was really good because we got to do treatment, but some of them it's assessment only and then kind of a handout.
Yeah. Wow. You know, things have changed from state to state. And then of course, from country to country, it's just amazing to see how things are different. And it's funny that even earlier, you know, you mentioned how the states are quote unquote, like farther advanced or further along when it comes to school-based OT practice or OT services. Cause I kind of see other states. In fact, Canada is one of those where they don't necessarily have the same model as us, but they're really gung-ho about the RTI, MTSS type of model. And so I almost see them as being more advanced than us in some ways. You know, the grass is always greener on the other side, I guess they can say, right?
Yeah.
So it's interesting how that works out. So, well, very cool. So now that we have this kind of picture of the system that you are working in, I'd love to hear more about the real reason we're here, which is physical education. And you wrote a book about this, so you know so much more than I could ever think of, and we're going to dive deep into that. So why don't you first introduce to us the concept? Where did this concept for the book come from?
Yeah, so I was on maternity leave about almost 4 years ago. And I was listening to a webinar about how to write a book. I think I was a bit bored that afternoon. I needed some brain stimulation. And I thought of a book that's going to be all about the whole of OT for schools. And then I quickly realised that was huge and not going to work. So I decided to break it down, focus on movements. And I was going to have one part on PE, one part on classroom environment and movement, and one part on playtime or recess. And then when I started outlining it, I just thought, no, this is three books, actually. And I just literally sat in Costa coffee shop and kind of just thought, which one should I go for? And went for PE. Maybe because I emotionally, because I had a hard time with PE,
okay.
I think there was something there. And it's really overlooked. It's an area that, you know, on IEPs or kind of our equivalent, it's hardly ever mentioned. And so I went onto Facebook because I'm part of some parent support groups. Mm-hmm. And I just said to them, can anyone tell me about their child's experience of PE? And the replies I got just kind of compelled me to write it, because sadly they're the opposite of what you were saying. It wasn't my child loves PE, it was they hate it, it's a living hell, they're hiding in the toilets, they're not going to school that day. It was so painful and difficult for them. And I was just like, I need to make it better. I want to make it better.
Yeah. Wow. So the title of the book is Inclusive PE Physical Education for SEND, S-E-N-D children. And that, again, is another term that we're not familiar with here. I looked it up, and so I know it's super simple, but I'll let you explain. Yeah. SEND.
Yeah. So SEND is Special Educational Needs and Disabilities. And in the UK, there's a kind of all this documentation around it, but it's split into four categories. So split into physical and sensory, communication interaction, cognitive and learning, and emotional, social, and mental health. So children are meant to fit into one category, but we all know kids don't fit into boxes and they often merge into several. So yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So you decided to take on inclusive physical education for students with disabilities. And where did you go from there? It sounds like you had some experience within school-based OT, if we want to call it that, for lack of a better word for the system.
Yeah. But
what did you know about PE? Did you have experience with supporting kids in PE? What made you feel like you could take on this book?
Yeah, well, I had lots of imposter syndrome and lots of days just thinking, how can I write this? I'm not sporty. I'm not a PE teacher. I just kept coming back to, you know, I'm not a PE teacher and I'm not sporty. And the educators, and that is their bag and their expertise, but I'm an OT. Mm-hmm. And I just kept coming back to, I'm an OT, I get the environment, I get the occupation, I have something to offer. And I just kind of kept that as my angle. And I really wanted to bring the voice of the child and family into it. So from the Facebook kind of chats with their consent and from some interviews, I've got quotes all through the book from children and parents, because I really wanted their voice to be heard. So once I found the structure of their voice, and then I briefly kind of explained, so say, I don't know, DCD or dyspraxia, I kind of say, what is it? How common is it? What are some of the kind of challenges? What are some of the strengths and strategies? And once I kind of had that structure, it just kind of flowed. Yeah. I had a bit of experience supporting kids with PE, but to be honest, a lot of strategies work outside of PE. It's just PE puts them in a spotlight. So teamwork or group work happens in the classroom, but with PE, it's kind of really public, really high stakes. Mm-hmm. And the same with the sensory environment that I'd worked with all the time. You know, in PE, you've got kind of, I don't know, the smell of aftershave or body odor, or you've got whistles, you've got lights. So it's all mm-hmm. the sensory stuff, but magnified.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I feel like there's a lot more to PE than just the sports too, that can also be very difficult for kids, especially kids who are on the spectrum or who have DCD and whatnot. And so what are some of the other factors that go into PE aside from just the physical aspect of PE that students can often have difficulties with?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many. So yeah, like I said, with those SEND categories, there's four categories, you know, physical is just one of them. Mm-hmm. So for a lot of students, the team element is really difficult. You know, if you struggle with maths, your teacher might see, and you might not put your hands up much, but not everyone's witnessing you get it wrong. In PE, you know, if you're playing particularly kind of more sport and you're the one that causes your team to miss the goal, or you can't hit the ball and all 30 kids are watching you, there's a lot of potential shame, humiliation. Yeah. People talk about the positive, you know, emotions that come with sport, and that's definitely the case. But there's also can be a lot of negative emotions, and just the kind of nonverbal communication is huge. So if you think about something like, do you have dodgeball?
Dodgeball, yeah. One of my favorites in PE.
Oh, cool. So if you think about dodgeball, you know, your attention is meant to be split in so many ways. You've got balls hurtling everywhere. You're trying to, like, not knock into the wall, not knock over your teammate, not crash with the ball, jump, dodge. Kind of, there's so much going on. And actually in the book, I've got two chapters where I just do an activity analysis on dodgeball and getting change for PE. And there's about 20 to 30 different elements, and that's not even all of them, for each one. And so, and also just emotional regulation. So, you know, you're out, you have to sit on the bench. So how do you feel? And, you know, if you kind of have a stress bucket that's already very full, it can spill over easily, that might trigger you to have a big reaction. And then with the other thing is the kids that are the worst get sent out the quickest.
Yeah, right.
So the kids that are really good get loads of practice, and the kids that are bad get sent out. It's just like the
never
wrong
thought
way
about
around.
That. Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And that's not just dodgeball. I mean, there's other instances where the same thing, right? In baseball, if you strike out a lot, you're only getting three pitches and you're back on the bench and you're not as good. So maybe the coach benches you. You're not playing out on the field, so you're not getting any better. And of course, the kids that are getting hits, getting on the bases are going to excel. Yeah, absolutely correct.
Yeah.
Very cool. So absolutely, it's definitely more than just physical education. And you really illustrated some of that social emotional, some of the difficulties with processing emotions, you know, having to be on the bench for a certain amount of time. And I'm sure you could go on and on. You talked a little bit about, right, like changing in the PE room. There's so much just in that aspect alone. Yeah. A lot of therapists, I think when it comes to the schools, sometimes we are quick to dismiss the need to working on some ADLs because we don't necessarily see it as a school-related activity. But when it comes to PE, there's a lot of ADLs in getting ready for a PE session. So there's just so much there.
Yeah, there's loads. It's like managing transitions and preparation. So for instance, my son was due to go swimming with his class to like the local pool, but we were only told like 4 days beforehand. And he's got a lot of sensory sensitivities. And so we tried to put a plan together, but it didn't get passed on to the teachers. And so he came home from swimming, being like, I'm never going again. They made me have two showers. I hated it. And fortunately, he has not to that pool. He's not gone back, but he has gone back to other pools. But had we been told 2, 3, 4 weeks in advance, been able to meet with the teachers and prepare everybody, it would have gone so much better. And, you know, little things like that are really simple, but they just take a bit of thought around preparation, transitions, all this kind of thing.
You mean planning ahead of time? What?
I know it's hard for schools. They've got a lot on, but yeah.
Yeah, it's hard. All right. So I kind of want to bring two elements that we've already discussed together. You know, you talked a lot about the difficulties, the concerns that students have had difficulty with NPE. And we also talked about that tiered model. And so I want to kind of maybe take it one tier at a time about how an occupational therapy practitioner might support students with PE. So if we kind of start at the base level, right, universal strategies, tier one, what are some things that you've had success with using tier one strategies to support students and maybe even the PE teachers themselves?
Yeah, so I think like my approach is what's good for kids with SEN is good for all kids. So instead of saying, because I don't know about the states, but we have kind of at least 16% of kids in any school that have special needs. Yeah, it's growing year on year. And so trying to say to the teacher, here's a list of recommendations for Bobby and Mohammed and Jack and Zoe. You know, they can't do it. But actually, if I'm saying to them, can you pick one thing from my book, one thing you're going to try this week? So maybe can you show a video clip of the game to give instructions visually and verbally instead of just trying to tell kids in a noisy kind of field or hall? You know, that's one thing they can do that can make it better for lots of kids. Mm-hmm. So my approach really with universal strategies is things for the whole class, and it's not changing the person, it's changing the environment and the occupation. So it's really focused on that. It could be, you know, for kids who are colorblind, and a lot might not know they're colorblind, just being careful with the equipment you have, the color of your cones, the, you know, the visuals that you have, things like that. So that would kind of be, which is what my book's all about, really, is those universal strategies. How can you make it better for everybody? The kids with no diagnosis, the kids that are struggling. And, you know, the kids that do really well, it can just like maximize their chances if they have choice and enjoyment, you know, use of all those things.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's tier one or universal strategies. And we're going to come back to that because I want to challenge you in that one just a little bit. But Let's move up to tier two or more of that targeted approach. So now you've given the teacher some universal strategies, but maybe there are some kids, I'm assuming at least a few kids now are still struggling. What might you do to support the teacher and the kids?
Yeah, so I have done kind of small groups, kind of like gross motor skill groups before, and kind of, you know, really try to work on skills. And then you can kind of use like co-op model and like teach that to staff as well to kind of really, you know, help them problem solve and understand feedback. And a lot of it's confidence. So I've also done some sensory integration work with kids, and suddenly they're able to kind of go on a slide, go on a swing. And because they're getting that movement and they're going on heights, that can kind of translate to the PE context as well. Mm-hmm. And they're more up for like participating and trying out things.
Yeah. So in that case, would you be working with the students during physical education, during their PE time, or would it be during potentially a different time during the school day or in the
Yeah, it'd be a different time of the day. Okay. So I also have done like whole class screenings. In fact, one day I was in the junior school, so that's like ages, 8 till 11. Okay. And I was in the playground for the whole day in like February or something. And each class had PE outside and I was kind of screening the whole class. And I'd pick out, you know, 5 or 6 kids, write them down, the next slot, and then follow that up with one-on-one assessment. And then we started playground intervention. So I kind of came up with gross motor kind of activities to have them develop, train the teaching assistants, and they did it at break time.
Very cool. Yeah. So you were actually, I mean, there's research about that. I don't have them off the top of my head, but I've read several research about that. I think Susan Basic actually has a entire program all about making recess and lunchtime and more friendly. I know the Comfortable Cafeteria is one program, but I think she has a recess program as well. So I think we can definitely support not just teachers, but also the aides that are out there during recess or during morning time or whatever it might be. So, yeah.
Yeah. And that was a bit of both, really, because I looked at, you know, a lot about the environment. So I did a playground audit. I did staff training. But then also we had that kind of group that was specifically kind of working on the gross motor skills intentionally. So that's a bit of a mix, really.
Awesome. Great. So from universal strategies to more of a group model. And then when it gets to the individual tier, how has that looked for you, or what have you had success with when it comes to directly working on some of the skills that might be utilized during physical education time?
Yeah, so it's probably been some of the kind of basic things, you know, catching, throwing, kind of confidence with that. Think about kind of some of the motor planning aspects of things. I don't think it's a very pull-out model typically with OT here. And so I wouldn't often kind of be alongside them in a PE lesson when I was doing the one-on-ones. Mm-hmm. It would kind of be at a different time. I kind of regret that a little bit because you're not in the right environment. I mean, it stops a student being self-conscious that you're kind of working with them one-on-one. But we all know that when you have a child in a quiet one-to-one environment, it's completely different from in a class of 30 with all the distractions, Absolutely. All the noise, all the emotions, and how much it translates, I often wasn't around to see.
Yeah.
And then quite quickly, at least with the NHS, I'd either kind of finish my block of sessions, or if the school was paying me, they'd want me to kind of be on to the next student.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I've got less experience with the individuals, and budgets are really, really stretched at the moment in schools in the UK. We've got the cost of living crisis. We've got kind of school roofs falling in. It's kind of chaos. And so saying to schools, these are things you can do that are very cheap or free for the whole class is kind of where things are at here, really. So I guess the book's kind of responding to kind of the political environment as well.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, you're right? When you do something one-on-one, it's very different from doing it in the classroom or out on the PE pitch or whatever. But at the same time, a lot of stuff that you do in the clinic, if you're working on dyspraxia, if you're working on social emotional skills, you know, the hope and the plan is that it does translate over it.
Yeah.
And hopefully that tied together with some of maybe the targeted or universal strategies can make a difference out there on the PE.
It can. And there's definitely a space for one-to-one. Definitely. I think there's just been so much focus from OT and schools and one-to-one. And I've seen some of the downsides that I've kind of gone a bit in the other direction. And personally, for my son, he had a lot of one-to-one interventions and adaptations, and it wasn't enough. And again, we've kind of got a national crisis, really, of so many children who can't access school, and they're nearly all like neurodivergent or autistic. Yeah. And the environments, you know, the uniform policy that we have, and the attendance awards that we have, and then locking the toilets, you know, all these things are making it really hard for our kids to access. So I'm kind of coming at it from that direction as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know your book is really aimed more toward the teachers and the parents that are trying to support their students in the school, but obviously it's for therapists as well. And I don't know, in my experience, I find that general education PE teachers are not always the most open to ideas from related service providers like OTs and whatnot. They tend to kind of think like, this is my space. You know, this Johnny's doing fine. Like, don't worry about it. I'll take care of Johnny, like the mentality. I know that's not true for every PE teacher, but I want to ask you, like, what are some general strategies maybe that have worked for you to kind of getting them on board a little bit? I just find as OTs, right, we can't just go in and give them more work to do. We have to be careful about it. And so I want to ask you maybe some strategies that have worked for you to kind of get the PE teachers on board a little bit.
I think increasing awareness is like the first thing. You know, they have to see the need, and they do see the need. You know, people have said to me, I know this student's struggling, but I don't know what to do to help them. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of across the board, particularly in primary where they teach every subject, and PE might not be their specialism, but they have to teach it. Mm-hmm. I'm always kind of very validating, like, I know you've got loads to do, I know you're pulled in every direction. And that's, yeah, so I think awareness. I think when I've had the opportunity to do training, either webinars or in schools, kind of CPD, and I show them, or I get them to do an activity analysis in groups of things like dodgeball, suddenly they're like, I had no idea. I had no idea how complicated it was. And I always compare it to driving a car. Like, when you start driving, you're like, man, the clutch and the indicators and the mirrors, and it's completely overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, now you're chatting away, you're planning your dinner, and you're like, oh, I've arrived. And I talk to them about how, you know, when it becomes automatic, it's easy. But for so many of our kids, there's so much else going on. It's not automatic, it's really challenging. So awareness is really key. And a lot of people have said the kind of stories in the book have been really helpful. And then just saying to them, you know, inclusion is a journey. None of us get it right. None of us are perfect. But pick one thing that can help. And maybe once that's embedded in a few weeks, pick the next thing, you know, and just make it really small and really simple. Like, yeah, could you show that 2-minute video? Could you make sure you don't just have red and green cones? Could you make sure when you put kids in groups, you keep them in groups for half a term or a term? You're not changing all the time, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So just kind of almost OTing it, making it small, making it manageable, the just right level of challenge for them. And I try to encourage people to kind of be in community, kind of talk to other teachers about it, find other forums.
Yeah. Absolutely. I like to say, right, we're not school-based OT practitioners. Our client is definitely more than the student, right? Like, the teacher is our client. The parents are often the client. The age, everyone on that campus is really part of the team. And I use the word client, but really it's just that we're all part of a team together, right? And we all need to support one another. So absolutely.
I was going to say is I think I kind of own my expertise, which I've been really surprised that they've really appreciated. Like, oh, you get this, you get that.
Yeah.
And I've kind of made sure to be like, you guys know the curriculum. You guys know how to teach. I don't, you know, so like, we're both experts in different ways. We both have different things to bring. Well, you know, I don't know everything. They don't know everything. But like you say, together, we could be that team.
Yeah, Yeah. So earlier in the podcast, I mentioned APE, adapted PE. And like I kind of alluded to earlier, I have come to the realization that APEs do not exist everywhere. And I'm assuming, yeah, you're shaking your head right now. So it's not happening in the UK either. So before you kind of started to support these students within PE, do you know of anyone that was doing this? Or is there another professional that was doing this at all?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, we have kind of national bodies, kind of like Youth Sport Trust, mm-hmm. and we have PE associations, and inclusion is very much on their agenda. And like, I know, for instance, I'm trying to think who it is. I think there's a cerebral palsy charity that have like a online module about gymnastics and how you can adapt things. So there is definitely training and support, mm-hmm. but it's not being from OTs.
Yeah,
it's been from maybe special school teachers or PE experts that have done some training and send. And a lot of it's probably been with quite physical disabilities. So we do have things like, you know, boccia, kind of sitting down or adaptive mm-hmm. sports. They nearly always take place outside of school. So it kind of be an evening group or for adults. And my focus kind of in the book is really kind of those neurodivergent students rather than kind of, you know, kids with CP or Down syndrome or different things.
Yeah. Yeah. Different needs. Yeah. No, I just think it's interesting because when I think about a PE especially, and I think about my experience as a school-based occupational therapy practitioner, I rarely get a concern about a student's ability to access PE. Not because it's not there. It's just because it's not typically the focus, right? Like everyone's so focused on math. Everyone's so focused on reading, legible handwriting that the other things just kind of take a back seat to it. And I don't know, especially if you're in an area where adaptive physical education doesn't exist, I don't know of anyone that would raise their hand and say, yeah, I can support this student out of PE. I know I've worked at a high school and we had one student who was in a life skills classroom with autism and he wanted to be on the baseball team. And so luckily I had no part of this, but the teacher really stepped up and she knew the baseball coach, so got the baseball coach involved, and he got to go to the games, or at least the home games, and be a part of that. And it was really great. And it just had me really thinking, like, we have really limited our scope in most school-based occupational therapy positions to handwriting, visual motor skills within the classroom, fine motor skills in the classroom. Maybe we get out to recess, or maybe we get out to the lunchroom to help out there, but very rarely is physical education even addressed at all. So I just love that you're looking into this. I think that's awesome.
Yeah. And I think it's been the same in my experience. And I think the schools don't ask and we don't ask them. So it's kind of like nobody's thinking about it. And yet there's kind of, you know, it could be quite polarizing. So I've talked a lot about the difficulties that kids can have with PE, but for other kids, it's the best class of the week. You know, maybe kids who are dyslexic mm-hmm. and, you know, the reading's really difficult and challenging, but actually they're amazing at dancing, for instance. And I found some stats when I was researching my book, and it's like 1 in 3 people in performing arts are dyslexic, but only 1 in 10 of the population. So there's loads of dancers who are just dyslexic. They're brilliant and they're dyslexic and they bring their strengths. And the same with ADHD. There's almost double the amount of athletes and baseball players that have ADHD than the population. Wow. Because the risk taking, the impulsivity, the being able to take in loads all at once, it's perfect. Mm-hmm. That's what you need to excel. True. So wow. Part of my work is also talking to teachers about the strengths mm-hmm. of, you know, kids of kind of different conditions or neurotypes, and helping them think, you know, how do we include some of these things, and how do we talk about role models, you know, talking to the class, you know, about Tiger Woods, or, you know, about different kind of sports people who are dyslexic or have DCD or autistic, because that's not talked about either, really.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so interesting. And you also include the word inclusive within the book, and which brings me to a whole nother mindset that I've experienced time after time again here, especially in the States, is on our IEP, which I think we talked about. You're familiar with an IEP here in the States, right? On an IEP, we are often trying to help a student mainstream or be more included in with general education peers. And a lot of times, the first class, in quotes, if you want to call it that, the first class that a student is mainstreamed into is physical education. So a student might be in a self-contained special day class for the entire day, but the first classroom that they get to go out, or not classroom, but period, that they get to go out and spend time with their general education peers is often that PE class. I guess it's, you know, it's because it's seen as, quote unquote, being easier than math, reading, and all the other areas. And it's interesting. I never thought about it in this limelight before, like from the point of view that we're putting so much emphasis on PE as being the place of inclusion, or at least the first point of inclusion for so many students. Yet we're not doing anything about it to actually make it inclusive. I mean, maybe an aide is going out there with a student, or I don't know. But yeah, we just need to, if we're going to help these students be included into general education, physical education, then we should probably also be supporting the people that are going to make that possible, like the teachers and the aides and whatnot. So
yeah,
I really love that you're doing this.
And it doesn't take very long to be the slowest or the one who misses all the hits before you start thinking, I'm rubbish at sport, I don't like PE, I can't do this. Mm-hmm. And we still kind of have, I mean, I used the terms earlier, I'm not very sporty. We still kind of have this language, but you don't have people saying, I can't remember, this is a quote from another podcast, but somebody said, you know, you wouldn't say, oh, they're the non-writers, you know, they're not very writey, they're the writers, because we just expect all students to write. But we have this, and we think, you know, you practice, you get better, but we don't always have this growth mindset with PE. We kind of, you know, so the kids who are good get better, and often the kids who struggle participate less, engage less. And things that can be really, really help with that are giving students voice and choice, because if they can find something that they enjoy, they could be more motivated, more engaged. And often schools aren't kind of asking kids, you know, what kind of activities do you want to try, and trying to bring that in as well to kind of bridge that gap.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, it's so important, but it gets so little thought. I think when we're sitting on these teams with ours, or with teams with speech therapists, with teachers, with maybe even the PE teacher, if we're lucky to have them in a meeting, in a team meeting, there's just so little thought about physical education because there's so much emphasis on the other areas. And, you know, there's a reason that PE and recess are really built into the school day, because a lot of that gives students a break from the academics, or it gives them the ability to build up some of their confidence, like you were talking about. It gives them the ability to do things with their hands, with their legs, with their feet, gross motor, all that good stuff. But as you mentioned, if a kid's not really succeeding in that, are they still getting the benefit that breaks and recess and physical education activities can actually give them? And I think that's huge, you know, and I really think that we need to be more mindful of that and bring that into the IEPs and bring that onto our team meetings and really discuss, you know, how is the student accessing the physical education? So definitely.
Yeah. And it can have a lifelong impact. So one mother I interviewed said she's never set foot in an exercise class in her life because she hated PE and its impact on her health. And so we're not just thinking about, you know, today, tomorrow, next week, next year. We're thinking about people's health, their entire life. You know, this is a public health issue, and we're perfectly placed as OTs to, you know, this is our area, but we need to speak out and be involved in this.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this question, because I want OT practitioners that are listening to this podcast to, you know, feel a little inspired, feel like, hey, I want to get out there and support my students who are going out to PE. I want them to be included with PE. I want them to actually feel like they can achieve with PE. And so I guess for you, that the question is like, where to start with this? You know, if they've never really talked to a PE teacher, if they've never written a goal for physical education, if they've just never had the idea to really support a student within the physical education realm, where do you think that they should get started with?
I would, if you can, observe a class, and I would like speak with I don't know if you, do you have like a special needs coordinator equivalent?
Usually it's a special education teacher, or they might have a case carrier for the, for each student.
Within mainstream?
Usually there's a case carrier for each student. Okay. So that, that case carrier kind of oversees everything.
Yeah. So whoever the relevant member of staff is, whether it's the head of PE or the kind of case carrier, but kind of find out, you know, what's the plan for that term? You know, what activity, what sport they're working on. And I would be doing an activity analysis. You know, I'd be sitting down and thinking, okay, here's all the sensory demands, the physical, the cognitive, the emotional, mental health, and then kind of match that up to either your one student or the handful of students, you know, are struggling and think, okay, is the sensory, is that causing the most problems? You know, is it the kind of cognitive, the communication? And then just kind of have a handful of really quick wins. You know, you want, you want the kids to experience success, the teachers and you, because if you get quick wins, you're going to get people on board for change. So like I said, it might be thinking, okay, you know what? The kids with DCD are really struggling. So let's ask for a little bit more repetition and let's make the motor planning a bit more explicit. The teacher's going to say, you know, to hit this, you need to bend your arm here, put your foot here, you know, talk it through. And that takes, what, 2 minutes? Yeah. Or it might be, you know, thinking about team selection or partner selection and just trying to change that. And again, what, it's free, it takes 1 or 2 minutes, but it can make a difference. And then you could get feedback from the students, you know, about what they find difficult, what's helped them as well.
Yeah. You know, I've realized that you've said these terms more than I think they are said in most of the podcasts that I record, and that's task analysis and activity demands. And these two terms are something that like are bedrock to occupational therapy. And I honestly don't think we use them enough because I really think they can be advantageous to us. I really think that these are terms that we can use to really show what we can do. And so I do want to ask you, like, how could someone use a task analysis to maybe get their foot in the door with supporting students in PE?
Yeah, I think I've been kind of surprised as well, because I just took it for granted. But every training I've done with teachers, they're like, wow, this is amazing. I'm like, this is OT, this is task analysis. So yes, I think having that conversation with the staff and just saying, you know, in my experience, lots of students can struggle with PE. And it's usually because it's either the physical demands, the sensory, the cognitive, you know, go through all of that and say, you know, have you experienced that? Have you experienced, you know, kids sitting out, not being fully engaged? Do you have any idea why? And just saying, you know, part of my job, I always say I'm a detective. My job is to figure out, like, what's the issue and figure out why? Is it the sensory? Is it the cognitive? Yeah. Is it the physical? And how, what do we do about it? And that's my job. You know, you're teaching 30 kids. And my job is to watch and figure out what's going on and kind of, unpick things.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. I think that that is definitely something that we should do more of. And I think it could be a one-on-one. Like, I think you were kind of alluding to just a one-on-one with the teacher. But you could also do this, you know, for the entire PE team, maybe of if there's multiple PE teachers, or maybe for the first grade team, because they also have to do their own PE, even though they're not a PE teacher. But really just take a common activity like what you did with the locker room, or if it's younger grades, the game of dodgeball, we talked about that earlier, and just kind of breaking that down and really showing teachers what's actually involved when it comes to playing dodgeball. And it's not, this is definitely not exclusive to PE, right? Like, we could probably get through to teachers when we're talking about handwriting if we go through the steps of doing a task analysis.
Yeah, this week in a training, I wrote all the demands of handwriting, and they were just like, my word, this is crazy. And it's the same thing like the car, you know, it's, and then I explain why for some kids it needs to be typing because you take away so many demands. But I think we undersell ourselves. So in the UK, we have these like consultants who come into schools and they're paid like the big bucks, basically. Yeah. And they come and advise on whole school improvement, but we can do that. So like, I'll meet with the head teacher on the same and say, you know, what are your top school priorities? And there will be handwriting or bullying or health issues. You know, there'll be something in there that we can say, you know, that's my domain and I can help you with that. I can help you look at that policy. I can help you write that curriculum. And so I think even how we position ourselves, we're underselling ourselves a lot because we're kind of reducing our scope. And I think I just really encourage people to be like, we do know our stuff. And, you know, we're the only ones that get the environment and the occupation. and the person
yeah,
we're the only ones that get all of that, and are looking across physical and emotional, you know, not just like physios, we're looking across it. And but teachers don't know that, because they just see us doing one-on-one handwriting maybe, or scissor skills.
Yeah, shout out to the PEO model there. You know, we absolutely can. Like, and I know now a few therapists that are doing that. Shout out to Danielle and me over at Mindfulness and Motion here in California. They're doing that. And you know what? They are occupational therapy practitioners, but they are purposefully rebranding themselves as educational consultants. Mm. They are educational consultants with a background in occupational therapy. And in that way, they are bringing mindfulness to classrooms to support all students. And they are doing full school trainings. They're doing full district trainings. They're also going into individual classrooms and doing trainings. And I absolutely think that's 100% accurate. Like, we are selling ourselves short. Like, I could probably list off like 10 different trainings that a therapist could do right now, like starting with breaking down behavior. Like, right? There's just so many trainings that we can do as OT practitioners. And you don't have to try and make the big bucks, right? Like, you can do this for two teachers at your school. You don't have to try and make this a business model. But I think if you are actively starting to try and train your teachers outside of one-on-one therapy time and working with your administrators to say, hey, can I have 35 minutes with teachers and just give a straight to the point training for them, it's going to benefit all the kids in so many ways. And I think that's kind of what you're leading to, which is just awesome.
It is. And I've been like asked to speak to university students, trainee teachers. So I've lectured them. And I was asked to speak at the Youth Sport Trust conference. And so the whole room is full of sporty people in their tracksuits with their trainers. And I'm there, like, the only person that's not from that background is the OT. And they want to hear what I have to say. But I've been quite careful to try to use educational language. So, you know, I've read up on the government policies. I read the Ofsted reports. I try to immerse myself in educational language. And I don't talk to them about PEO. I don't talk to them about activity. I mean,
It's so important.
An activity analysis. I say, you know, this is OT. But then I try to very much kind of talk in their world as well. Yeah. And I've had the best reception for the book has been from teachers. It's been great.
That's awesome. And bringing it back to your book, as we kind of wrap things up here, I really want to ask you, like, what is your aspiration for the impact that your book will have, not only within the OT community, but just in general? Like, if you could have that pie in the sky goal for your book, your aspiration, what is that?
Just be to make things better for, like, the individual kids. You know, like, I want it to impact a lot of people, but it comes down to the one. And I interviewed one mum, and she said that her son, from reception to year four, used to roll around during PE, and when it was really bad, he'd eat daisies. It was that bad. She moved into a new school, and within a few terms, he was on the sports team for the school.
Wow.
And that is the impact, that is the difference that inclusion that OT can make. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want to happen for lots of children and for lots of teachers. They want to do it, but they don't know how. So to give them that confidence and know-how, really.
Yeah. Fantastic. I think that's one of the things that all, you know, school-based OTs, we don't go into it for the money. We go into it to make a difference in those individual kids' lives. So, yeah. And to finally wrap things up here, of course, I want to say thank you, but I also want to give you the opportunity to share where anyone can learn more about your book. Where's the best place to go to learn more and potentially purchase your Inclusive PE and Send Children book?
Yes, it's on Amazon. That's the main place. So it's a physical paperback, and it's on Kindle and Kindle Unlimited. So it's on kind of, you know, the state sites and the UK and lots of different sites. And then my website, which is schoolot.co.uk, I have like a free strategy sheet you can download. So that's got the strategies from the book. And I've also got blog posts on there and different resources for OTs and teachers, and reviews of the book and more information about it as well.
Awesome. We will definitely be sure to link both of those, the Amazon as well as your website. And yeah, Faith, just one more time, really want to say thank you so much for coming on and sharing about how OTs can support students' inclusivity within physical education. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you, Jason. It's been great.
All right, that is going to wrap up episode number 146 of the OT Schoolhouse podcast. Thank you so much to Faith for coming on and just sharing what occupational therapy looks like in the UK and sharing how it could look like in order to support all students in the physical education realm. There is so much more to PE than just the physical side of PE. You know, there is that social emotional aspect. There are the ADL components of dressing in and out for PE. Just so much more than actual playing the sports, right? Learning the sports, learning all the social nuances that go into it. So I hope you appreciated this podcast episode with Faith Newton. Be sure to also check out her book if that's something that you're interested in. It may also be worth purchasing for the PE department at your school site. Who knows? But with that, thank you so much for tuning in. Really appreciate you being here, and we'll see you next time on the OT Schoolhouse podcast. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the OT Schoolhouse podcast. For more ways to help you and your students succeed right now, head on over to otschoolhouse.com. Until next time, class is dismissed.